I recently became homeless about 10 years ago.
So when I lost my job, I lost the roof over my head. That's been a couple months ago.
So for me, man, like, this has been a struggle for me.
I'm a brick mason by trade. That's what brought me here to Charlotte.
You know, you have no purpose, you have no identity.
I'm a certified building maintenance service tech. Electrical, plumbing, carpentry, all that. I'm certified in that.
I've been homeless for the last past 7.5 years.
I don't want my family to see this. They know I'm homeless, they don't know what that entails.
I don't wish this on anybody.
I want to be off the streets.
I'll do anything, man, to get off the streets.
So I went to meet a few friends the other night for a beer. As I was pulling in, I saw a man sitting on the sidewalk up against this building with just a few personal items next to him. So I parked the car and I went over and talked to him. Initially, I scared the crap out of him, poor guy, and I was trying to approach him easily. I feel like I'm talking about trying to capture wildlife by hand, good God. But that's what it felt like. And I asked him if he needed anything. You want to know what he said? A Coke. That's it. Something so simple. A fountain Coke from the convenience store directly across the street. So I went across the street and got him a Coke. I gave it to him, and then I started talking to him. He'd been out there for about 3 weeks. Came all the way from Virginia for a job with a friend, but the friend disappeared on him. And in the 3 weeks since he's been here, he got robbed and had his birth certificate stolen. So now he's got to go through that whole ordeal of getting his friggin' identity back. The guy came here to work. He told me he started a job but wouldn't get paid for another week. I just got to say again that what blew me away was that this guy traveled hundreds of miles for a new start, gets ditched by his friend and left alone, has his identity stolen while he's waiting for his first paycheck. He's got no place to live, and when I asked him if he needed anything, he said a Coke. So just let that sink in for a second. Thanks for being here. This is You May Have Seen. Today, I am excited to have the amazing Kenya Joseph with me. Kenya is a tornado of a person, just simply meaning that once she sets her mind to something, she's going to shake things up. Kenya is a business owner, wife, nonprofit organizer, advocator, and just a downright superhero in my book. She's here to help me have a better understanding of what's going on with people like that guy I met the other night. We'll also hear from another one of our neighbors, a great man with a great story. Okay, let's go. So now that I finally have you here, I've been so excited to be able to sit down and talk with you beyond just, you know, a 10-minute, you know, hi, how are you in the parking lot?
Of course.
When you're looking at me going like, who the hell is this guy? I'm probably going to screw things up. Forgive me if I do. I usually start every interview by saying, so-and-so, where may we have seen you? And that usually goes into, you may have seen me on this TV show or this movie. Mm-hmm. This is not the same interview.
Right.
I'm going to ask you the same question, though, because I'm going to be interested to hear how you answer it.
Okay.
Kenya Joseph, where may we have seen you?
You may have seen me on the local news all last summer advocating for my food pantry, advocating for homeless services in Charlotte. Mm-hmm. You may have seen me because you encountered my business, which is Perfect Blue Alchemy. We're still finishing out a partnership with Vice Media Group right now. So you may have seen my ads through Refinery 29 or through Vice. You may have heard my voice during several city council meetings. You may have seen me on Instagram, just putting out truth to power about what happens here in Charlotte to the most disadvantaged people.
Wow.
That's where you might have seen me.
That is a phenomenal, phenomenal answer. Tell me the name of your business again. This is new information.
Yeah.
It's
Perfect Blue Alchemy. It's organic and vegan, handcrafted fragrances and body products. We have stuff for men and women. And I've been in business for 5 years, so that's like my job.
Right.
And then I started my first nonprofit with my mom, actually. That was in 2017. And then I founded my second nonprofit with my partner, Jessica, in last year, in response to what we were experiencing in the pandemic. We literally, her and I literally met in Tent City.
Wow.
This was back in April. So pandemic was still very new. Mm-hmm. Everybody was still reacting to it. And at that time, there was maybe 20 tents. And we started just working together and just partnering, building a friendship. Pretty much one day we were like, we need to take this a step further, you know? And so we started working on that. We formally organized in June. We received our full nonprofit status later on in the year. But last year was probably the busiest year of my life in terms of just working. This year is also busy, but it hasn't been as busy as last year was a game changer.
Sure.
Yeah.
So you actually started Hearts for the Invisible.
Yeah, I'm one of the founders. You're one of the Jessica founders. And I founded it together. Okay. Yeah.
Because I went to the website, and of course it says Hearts for the Invisible Charlotte Coalition is comprised of over 15 frontline nonprofit organizations. Yes. So that's where I was a little like, okay, so how does
this... So we basically formed a coalition of existing organizations after we founded, and we went through a lot of growth and metamorphosis through this time. So we're actually, what we're doing right now is completely restructuring. Mm-hmm. So because our organization was created to respond directly to these needs, we have to always maintain adaptability. Mm-hmm. And so we're in a place right now where we've picked up so much education and learning through this process. People have joined, people have left. So we're restructuring to gear up for what we see coming down the road at the end of the year, where now kind of the real fallout of things, it's starting to shake out now. And it's going to be pretty serious, truthfully. Yeah. So we're getting ready for that.
Talk to me a little bit more about that. Is that having to do with the end of the good gosh,
what's the eviction that? Moratorium?
Thank you.
Yes. So that's a big part of it. Yes. But there are other aspects at play too. There's of course the termination of unemployment benefits. There is vaccine mandates. Mm-hmm. There is reduced federal funding in certain cases, or, you know, state funding, depending on where you are. And there's also the fact that, truthfully, things that happened last year, band-aids were put on, wounds were not treated, things were not stitched and fixed. And at the same time, funding that would normally be there in the course of a year was not there. I think that a lot of the public was very like, everybody was like, oh, well, they're releasing extra funding. They're really releasing COVID relief funds. Mm-hmm. And that kind of like blanketed everything. Everybody's like, okay, the government is coming through for us. But that's in reality not how things played out so comfortably. Okay. So there's a lot of fallout from that too.
You were an integral part of what was going on with Tent City and helping the folks.
Crazy enough,
there. And actually, when Tent City was shut down, cleared out, moving them to the transitional hotels where they are now. Now, how has all that gone since then?
It has been a lot. There has definitely been some real successes. Mm-hmm. So what ended up happening is at least for us personally, the evacuation happened. We were literally on the ground moving people that day and through that weekend. They moved into the county acquired property. And then my partner, Jessica, actually was fortunate enough and also dedicated and committed enough to where she ended up being one of the unofficial staff at the hotel. So she worked there every day this entire time that they've been there since this happened back in, February.
Right.
February, March.
Right.
Yeah. Most of the people have been given some type of housing. They've been moved on to some type of housing or program to help them kind of get on their feet. There are still, of course, unfortunately, people who have fallen through the cracks a little bit, they have very difficult circumstances. There's also kind of a disconnect because we haven't bridged the gap in Charlotte truly of understanding that, you know, they really push the idea of housing first. And I get where that comes from. If a person is outside and they have nothing, we need to get them into a house. But the problem is, if you don't address the issues that brought them there, whether it be mental health issues or substance use or trauma, if you don't put that right alongside and holistically approach it, that person's chances of making it are severely reduced. And so we're still seeing that today. We're really kind of wondering, you know, as we go day by day, like, how is this going to play out? Like, for us, we were very fortunate in the midst of all this. Like, the weekend that we had to move everybody,
right,
within the next 3 days, we were ready to open our transitional house. So we have one transitional house right now, mm-hmm, which we're turning into permanent housing.
Great.
We were able to take 6 men right out of Tent City that we, of course, had working relationships with. Mm-hmm. And many of them are still there now. So they're safe and stable there, working, right, and, you know, doing, excellent, their thing. So we're working on potentially 2 more houses right now. Mm-hmm. One is at a closer step to being complete. We realize that we can kind of create like a niche in that space of just doing it. I mean, granted, of course, our hearts are like, we need a 300 unit property. We need to fix this. Sure. But we need to do something. And the fact that we even have something, especially from, you know, starting this with $0,
right,
and just heart and dedication and effort. So we're going to keep going in that vein while we start to ramp up our advocacy again as we see new challenges or different challenges popping up in this process. Because even though the Tent City that the public knew, mm-hmm, this area, right, 12th Street, was evacuated, there were always and still remain other smaller tent cities. There are tents starting to pop up in areas that are becoming more visible again. Mm-hmm. So we know, of course, that there is a need for the work that we do, but we also know that, of course, the problems that are underpinning all of this have not been addressed. And that is our biggest frustration too. And that's what we're fighting for in that capacity.
The thing that's been, one of the things that's been most interesting to me as I've been exploring all of this and taking this, you know, journey, is finding out exactly how many different organizations are working on the homeless problem, whether
it
be...
Yeah, it's tricky. It's very tricky because there's a lot of, you know, obviously what happened last year was so visible and so stark. Mm-hmm. So you have new organizations or newer organizations. You have organizations that formed because in response. Mm-hmm. You have organizations that pivoted to respond, mm-hmm, and they may have been doing something else previously. You have all sorts of things going on. So that is tricky, you know, in knowing who all the players are.
Sure.
You know, we still have that issue too. Like, we're focused on what we do, of course, but kind of knowing who's on the street has sometimes been difficult, but there are quite a few really dedicated organizations and people who are working on it from various angles and capacities, and all are so necessary in this process.
How was it when you first started doing this stuff? Like, when you went out there, I mean, was it, because I can imagine it's got to be difficult to get people to trust you or to figure out who you are and,
yes,
what you're doing. And
so in the beginning, When I first went out there, I went out there. So I live in University. My food pantry is in Huntersville, but we service the entire county. And so literally me and then by extension, my food pantry got involved in Tent City because we literally drove by there and saw it.
Okay.
You know, at that time, and especially with the beginning of COVID, obviously people weren't going out. So we weren't in Charlotte often anyway. Right. In that capacity. So when we saw it, this was very early on, I was like, we got to figure this out right now, you know? And so we started to kind of, we drive through and kind of just observe, see what's happening. It, you know, is somebody out there, mm-hmm, giving food out? Is, you know, what's happening? And so we saw that this is all happening on the property of Roof Above. Roof Above's day service center is supposed to be open. So, mm-hmm, people are getting some type of food. So we knew that. So we said, what can we do that's different? And I literally parked my truck and I got out and I talked to people and I talked to a few of the residents and I was like, look, you know, what do you guys need? And two of them had this whole organization. They had table. They were like, we have a sign that says exactly what we need, the supplies that they need.
Yeah.
So I took pictures of the sign. And I was like, okay, we can do that. So I, you know, took that information, went home. We organized a budget out of our operating budget. Mm-hmm. We procured a bunch of the supplies that they were asking for, and we brought them down that weekend.
Right.
That was the start. And as we were down there, we were like, what lasting effect? Like, I get it. They need these supplies. We can continue to do that, but what else can we do? So we came up with the idea of, you know, all these people are citizens of the United States. They've worked, they've contributed to the system in some way at some point, which means they're qualified for their stimulus, and no one's addressing that. So we set up a stimulus drive to get people signed up. Mm-hmm. And what we found in that process was that in the transition experience of their lives to get to that point, so much was lost. So what we learned is, okay, there are difficulties in accessing this funding and this money because people don't have their IDs. Their IDs were stolen. Their IDs were lost. So people need that. People have trusted caseworkers, crashed with friends, and their social security ID numbers have been stolen. People have filed for their stimulus in their name. We found all sorts of issues as we went through this. Wow. So yes, there were quite a few people that we were able to, like, it was straightforward. Like, we did it for you. We did it because we always did it with the person right there. Mm-hmm. Some of those people were straightforward. It was like, great, it's coming. You know, you pick up your mail from roof above and you're good. But there were so many other issues that popped up too. And we did the stimulus drive over the course of a month. So we went out there like every weekend. Mm-hmm. And in the second to last drive that we did was that's how I met Jessica. You know, we started meeting up and talking and coordinating, and especially as a pantry with our ability to supply, to do larger supply, we started coordinating, like, what do you need? How can I help you? That's how we started to work together down there.
More with Kenya Joseph in just a minute. You're listening to You May Have Seen, proud member of the Queen City Podcast Network, powered by Ortho Carolina. There are dozens of great podcasts on the network, so go check them out. I'm sure you'll find a bunch of stuff there that you'll enjoy at queencitypodcastnetwork.com.
You May Have Seen is a member of the Queen City Podcast Network, powered by Ortho Carolina. Now offering video visits so you can take control of your orthopedic care from the comfort of your home. Schedule online at orthocarolina.com. Ortho Carolina, you improved.
I had a chance to talk to Mr. Jean. He's an incredible presence and spirit. Truly, I know a lot of people say that to sell you on a story or feeling, but this is really true. Every time I've gone out to help serve meals and Mr. Jean shows up, he's one of the most grateful, positive, hopeful, encouraging, supportive, and loudest people there. He definitely makes his presence known. He'll jump right in and help any chance he gets. You can't help but smile and be filled with hope and energy when Jean's around. Jean's been homeless in Charlotte for 10 years. He still gets choked up when he hears himself say it out loud. So Jean, where are you from?
Lafayette, Louisiana.
And how long have you been here in Charlotte?
33 years. I'm a brick mason by trade. That's what brought me here to Charlotte.
Really?
I build the transit. That tall building right there, I build the elevator shaft.
Really?
I build, whatchamacallit. I recently became homeless about 10 years ago.
Okay.
I was in the Army. My MOS was 12-hour. I played with explosive.
Okay. And how many years were you in the Army?
6 years.
6 years.
Okay. I did two part-time because I was a minor, still in school in the National Guard, and then I went full-time.
What years were this? What was this?
Like? I went in 82.
So 82 to 88, roughly?
Mm-hmm.
All righty.
Okay, we was doing a rappel out of helicopter. We were way, way up there.
Right.
Somebody in my unit wet the rope on my side.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing a tandem rappel. We were the first two. When you got a wet rope, you have no control over your speed. Keep from breaking my legs. I picked my legs up, landed on my tailbone. Like,
bam.
The guy next to me said, Jones, you all right? I said, no, I have no feelings in my leg. Everybody had a radio. Medical helicopter picked me up. He came with me to the hospital. We were real good friends. They came up to me, a doctor. They x-rayed me. And one doctor told me it's a 99% chance I'll never walk again. The man, they flew me to the rehabilitation hospital.
Yep.
There's one nurse, there's one black nurse. Mm-hmm. She came in my room every day and worked me out in the heated pool. It was like 2 months later, I grabbed her and I kicked her.
You kicked her on purpose?
To let her know, because my legs had no feeling. I didn't kick her hard.
Right.
She said, I'll be done. You got feelings in your legs. You got...
Wow.
You're the only one believed in me. You're the only one believed in me, nurse. Mm-hmm.
High school, the military, and then you got into brick masonry?
I was doing brick mason work at the age of 13.
Okay.
My daddy was a carpenter contractor. I had six cousins at brick mason.
Mm-hmm.
I was rolling the wheelbarrow around, and when I turned 13, they bought me a trowel. They said, don't worry about keeping up with us. I don't care if you don't lay, but one brick a day, lay it right. If not, I'm going to put that shovel back in your hand. You'll never see this trowel again. And I've never looked back since after that.
So when's the last time that you worked as a brick mason?
I still do it off and on.
Yeah?
You know, if I know you real good, I'll do it.
So you have people who come and find you and know you and ask you to do some work from them, mm-hmm. for them from time to time.
I've been working with a guy I met at a church program.
Okay.
His name is Charles Whitley Hudson. He's a retired firefighter. He got a landscape. I've been with him 18 years.
Wow. So can I just ask you straight out, how did you end up becoming homeless here in Charlotte?
I guess losing a good job. But I have a man, Mr. James, who just left him over here. He's trying to get me in the Morris place.
Right. Okay.
The lady Miss Deb from Block Love.
Yep.
She know him. She called him one day. He mm-hmm. was on that side. He said, man, I got to get you in the Morris place.
Okay.
You don't have no felonies. You know, look, the felons you did have, that was way back then.
Right.
You got a couple of misdemeanors, yep. you know, and stuff. That's right. Way back then.
Can you talk to me about what it's like to be a homeless person in Charlotte? What is your day-to-day routine like normally?
My day-to-day routine is going to work every day.
Is it? It is.
I cannot stand up with no signs begging nobody for no money.
Right.
If it's going to shovel shit out of a horse stable, picking up trash.
Yep.
That's me. I just got through cutting 9 yards running behind a commercial walk behind wide open all day. Today.
Wow.
Did it yesterday. Detail the boss wife Lexus.
Mm-hmm.
His Camry, his sport Cadillac, and the neighbor Camry.
Mm-hmm.
The neighbor won't pay me till next week.
How do you get treated normally from day to day? Just by people on the streets, people you pass by,
you got some good people.
Yep.
Then you got some of those that know I work and got a little money. They try to use you.
Yeah. What's the biggest misconception? What's the thing that people get wrong all the time?
That they're worthless piece of shits. They have no respect for people. I go up to people all the time. People do something and thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. That's the way I was raised. If we didn't say yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, yes, sir, no, sir, my parents slapped the shit out you right there in front of people.
Right. Do you still have contact with your family at all?
Mm-hmm. I just got through talking to my mama turned 96 years old just June 6th.
Come on. Is she still in Louisiana?
Still living.
Man. When's the last time you saw her?
For her birthday, June 6th.
Did you really?
This lady, Miss Terry, that be out here.
Yep.
No, I didn't have money to go home. Gave me a round trip second class ticket to go home and see my family.
Oh,
man,
my gosh,
that was so touching to see my mom. I seen my mom in 10 years because I was homeless.
Oh, man. That's amazing.
10 years I hadn't seen her.
That's so amazing.
And we both cried in her bed.
You're going to make me cry.
People cry.
Yeah. That's a fantastic thing.
Man, that's an experience I'll never forget. To go see my mom in 10 years.
Listening to Gene only brings up more questions for me. Questions that I don't have the answers to before this interview ends. Spoiler alert. Here's more with Kenya Joseph.
The fact that you started just a little over a year ago
and
you've accomplished, it seems like an awful lot. You guys have a lot of momentum. You've already opened a men's home, like you said.
Yeah.
And I know of other organizations who have opened similar men's homes. I hope I'm not asking a stupid question, but are there homes for women as well? Similar ones?
So there are.
Okay.
Some of them are private. Some of them are like a larger organization situation. Yeah. So that is something that we are looking to do potentially in the future. The reason why we chose men as our first demographic was because that's like 80% of the population.
It is.
So that's, you know, so it's like, what is the most dire need? That's what we're looking at first.
Gotcha. How have you managed to be so damn successful in such a short amount of time, aside from just sheer determination and will? Or is that it?
It's that, but it's also, I think, you know, I have a very, very heavy, high-level corporate background. I was in corporate finance for almost 20 years. And what is missing from the nonprofit world as a whole, like nationally, this is the experience. nonprofit world is very different from the business world. And the two don't meet very often. But when you bring business knowledge and you bring business innovation into nonprofits, you can get so much done. And that's what's missing. People get into, you know, people get into nonprofit work from an emotional place. And there's nothing wrong with that. Because of that, you're getting people, you're oftentimes getting people who don't have certain levels of savvy. Mm-hmm. Savvy is what it takes to really get things done and get in the right people's faces and know how to navigate that circumstance. That's what you need. So that, at least I can say from my personal self, is like, that's what I bring to the table. It's like, I approach, you know, even the way that we built our food pantry, and it's now one of the biggest pantries in the whole metro area, is because we have a business background. We're approaching the clients not as, oh, these people need. We're approaching them as customers, people who we want to help. We want to see them thrive, but we also want to provide them the best possible service that we can. Right. We care about the customer experience. We care about their feedback and what they're reporting to us. It's not just we're handing stuff out. Right. That's a big difference from how a lot of nonprofit work is done. And so that, I think, is a big part of what propelled us to be able to make the inroads that we were making so quickly. But I think also too, at least for Hearts for the Invisible, it was also about the visibility. Mm-hmm. I've been, you know, working in the food insecurity space for almost 5 years. That's a relatively invisible problem, even though it's a very rampant and pervasive problem, especially in Charlotte. But the homeless issue, Everybody can turn on the news and see tents. Everybody can drive through there and see it.
Right.
So there's a certain level of I guess, built-in support for humanity that you don't necessarily see with other issues.
I need some of that. I need some of that savvy. I think I like that. I need to figure out how to get more of that. You've got your own business. You've got your own personal life. And then you have Hearts for the Invisible.
Yeah.
And you said, it's the first weekend I've had off in however long. Seriously, like, when do you sleep? What is your day-to-day like?
I have basically, since we started the food pantry, which is Hearts and Hands Food Pantry, I adapt. Every day is different. Mm-hmm. The needs of the day are different. And you just do it. You know, I put a very high premium on self-care. My business brand is built on that. Okay. We are a wellness company. So there's a lot that you can do to care for yourself, but you have to be disciplined mm-hmm. in order to show up in the world in the way that is needed for these types of things. That was a big thing. Like last year, okay, to be fair, last year, all bets were off.
Right.
All bets were absolutely off. Last year was an emotional, ridiculous, absolutely traumatizing year. I'm going to be very honest.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it was nonstop. My husband was like, so you're married to Jessica now, my partner.
Right.
You just married her now. You talk to her. You don't talk to me. Because we were constantly in communication, constantly with each other, because we were out there doing the work, you know, advocating, doing all these different things. I'm fortunate that this year has brought a little bit of a shift, because now we have more structure. The emergency has dialed back just a notch.
Right.
But that just a notch was enough space for me to properly care for myself. And I'm still working through it. It's still tricky. Definitely. It's still tricky, but I'm trying. So
I think we're all in the same boat together on that one. So talk to me about what you, between your food pantry and Hearts for the Invisible, what you're actually providing on a day-to-day basis or weekly basis to the community.
With the food pantry, we provide groceries, baby supplies, pet supplies, personal care items to now about 4,000 families around Mecklenburg County. Yes. So we have curbside pickup and we have delivery. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure we're one of the only pantries that at this point allows personal choice. So what happened was when the pandemic started and we, of course, had to now shut down like in person.
Yeah.
You know, and this is where the business savvy comes into play.
Okay.
We were like, okay, how do we, first of all, adjust to the greatly heightened volume of people that we're now dealing with, but how do we also provide them the best service in doing so? So what I did was I went into our website and I built a back end that functions like Instacart. So people can literally, when they make their appointment, they go and pick out what they want from our inventory. Oh my God. And so that gives them full control. So that also is great because it caters to people with special needs. Mm-hmm. We have elderly clients who are shut in that have diabetes. They have special diets. We have people who are vegan and need that to be respected. Mm-hmm. We have, of course, every, you know, creed, every religion. So we want to always be able to provide to everyone no matter what their need is. And that's really the best way to do it. We don't do food boxes. Okay. That's not what we do. Okay. As far as Hearts for the Invisible, we still give out survival supplies, mm-hmm. especially if we encounter people on the street who are in need of them. That has tapered down quite a bit because, of course, everything that happened with the tent city mm-hmm. evacuation. In them moving into one county provided space, the care for them has pretty much been peer support, like mm-hmm. case management, like really walking through the journey with really? Them, getting them, advocating for the different services that someone might need. Because of course, everybody's situation is different.
Right.
Even though I can't be on site at the hotel, whereas Jessica is, you know, my pantry was still providing special meals to specific people who have different dietary needs and medical issues because the county couldn't do it.
Gotcha.
So they were like, look, we have this person is diabetic. We have this person can't eat pork. This person can't do this. So because of the freedom that I have with my food pantry, we were able to fully provide for those people outside of whatever the county was providing to feed them. That was really important. Mm-hmm. And of course, anything that somebody needs, that's like, hey, I really need this. Of course we can procure it for them. So there's that too. Gotcha. You know, we would always, even in the food packs that I would create for these people, I'd pop in certain personal supplies because I know what they're getting there. I see right. it. Like I know when I work with Jessica, I see it when I go there. So I'm like, I'm going to do something nice for somebody, you know, I'm going to do a little bit extra yep. because it's a rough situation. It's traumatic.
So I apologize if I didn't understand this correctly. So then who does your food pantry cater to specifically? Like it's not just open to the public.
It's open to the public.
It is open to the public.
Anybody who needs help with
okay,
food.
So, yeah. Okay, so that's the thing. Anybody who needs help with food, I guess that's what I'm trying to figure out. Like, mm-hmm. is it like, you know, you're sitting here in my house. You can yeah. see that, you know, I can just run to the local grocery store without a problem. But would I still be able if I
no,
wanted?
No, no, no.
Okay, so, this is what I'm trying
for
to
for example.
Have. Yes, thank you.
Well, here's the metaphor.
Thank you.
So yes, you're here in your house. If your house burns down tomorrow, then you come see me.
There you
and
go.
And we got you.
Gotcha.
If you contracted COVID and you couldn't work and you have 5 kids, come see me. But also, of course, we are part of the various organizational referral systems for the state and the county and the city. So we take referrals from 211. We take referrals from another big system that exists, from Atrium, from Novant. We are there to stand in the gap for that because our organizational standpoint is that food is a basic human right. Mm-hmm. It's 2021. Food should really not be the issue. Really, it shouldn't, because right. how many tons and tons of food get thrown out every single day, right? So if we can provide food, that to us is very easy. But we all have from day one always taken it a step further, because when you have a family who is financially disenfranchised in some way, whether mm-hmm. it's chronic underemployment or whatnot, right. or whether it's catastrophic, like a fire or an illness, yeah. you know, you want to care for the person as much as possible. So it's not just about food, and it's not just about even allowing them to choose the foods that they want, because that's another important thing. That's about personal dignity and mm-hmm. respect. But it's also like finding out, like, hey, this family has 3 kids and 1 is an infant. We have diapers for you, so you don't have to worry about that while you're going through what you're going through. You know, we can get everybody in your house toothbrushes. We can get everybody in your house toothpaste and deodorant. We can get you the soap that you like. We can get you masks. We have sanitizer for you. We have dish soap for you. We have paper towel. We have toilet right. paper. All the things that really add up yes. in high cost for a family that nobody thinks about. So we really pride ourselves on that.
I think that's incredible. That's incredible. That's incredible. With all the different organizations, groups, government entities, whatever it might be, county, that are working on this particular issue, mm-hmm. it seems like everybody's still just kind of working individually in their own little parts of the world, and there's no...
To a certain degree, yeah. There's no cohesion.
And
yeah.
that's that just makes me kind of go, And I don't like, talk to me about.
Well, I'll start by saying this. Small organizations and grassroots organizations didn't get any respect in this city for homeless services until about February this year, when they had to move all those people and they realized that they don't have the relationship with the people and the people don't trust them. That's the problem.
Right. So then in a perfect world for you, mm-hmm. with what you're trying to do and what you're doing with the food pantry and Hearts for the Invisible, what do you feel that you need to have the success on the level that you want to have it, to accomplish the things the way that you visualize? You know, you're out there with these people. You see,
yeah.
you see it on a daily basis, what they need,
right?
What they're struggling for, what they're struggling with. If somebody was waving the magic wand,
what could happen?
Kenya.
So here's the extremely simplistic pipeline that I would imagine, especially in a time of like a pandemic. So mm-hmm. this is a special case, right? So the county, the state, the city finds out, okay, let's just make the numbers easy. Let's say we're getting $1 million towards this problem, mm-hmm. right? You have employed staff there at your city, county, government, whatever. Mm-hmm. They should be saying, okay, we have this pot of money that's been approved. Part of our work is now finding out who is doing what in our area, reaching out to these places and bringing people together in meetings and saying, okay, I see you're this service provider and you do X, you do Y, you do Z. We have this pot of money. We want to distribute this money across all of you doing this particular work. That's the first start. Mm-hmm. The second start is we want to engage all of you equitable voices at the table to find out what's going on the ground and how we can support your efforts or partner with you to create something new. That's what needs to happen. And that has not happened to the degree that it needs to. It's starting to happen. Don't get me wrong. Okay. I want to make that clear. It is starting to happen in some capacity, and that is cool. But we're woefully behind in what could have been accomplished and what could have been addressed when you have a catastrophic, unplanned situation like a pandemic. Because this could not be about a pandemic. We could be talking about this all coming to a head because of a hurricane.
Sure.
Charlotte is woefully unprepared for these types of things.
Okay.
It could be a hurricane. It could have been, God forbid, a terrorist attack. It could have been so many different things that could have contributed to the same situation.
Right.
So when are we going to take the learnings of this one that is we're still in and apply them accordingly?
Right. There's certainly that element of who the hell could have seen this coming, but mm-hmm. at the same time, I guess the flip side of that is like, just in case.
Yeah.
Maybe we gear up a little bit.
And sadly, unfortunately, you know, for people who might feel uncomfortable with this, you know, obviously to do this type of work where you're dealing with servicing humans mm-hmm. in the goals and efforts to elevate where they're at, it costs money. You know, and obviously with across many different organizations,
sure.
there's also different ideas and ideologies about how to potentially accomplish the same thing. But we haven't even had that setting of like, let's bring everybody to the table and hear you out. We haven't even gotten to that point. So that's a big part of the frustration in the work, especially for me. Like one of my personal passions has really become the advocating part. Mm-hmm. I found kind of my own personal niche there. People listen when I talk, and I'm very happy and mm-hmm. thankful for that. I like to use my voice for good, but I also have to fight really hard to be at the table. And sometimes it creates contentious situations to do so. Doesn't mean I'm going to stop, but it does mean it shouldn't be that way. I had this exact conversation this morning. I'm part of a national working group on food insecurity, and I'm part of the Charlotte delegation through the food pantry. We were talking about this very thing in putting together our action plan for next year.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about the power of advocacy and storytelling. And it's like, yes, on the one hand, it's like, okay, we need to create more public awareness of sharing individual stories of people that are experiencing these problems. Yes. And I get that, the importance of that. But at the same time, I'm like, there's a part of that at this point of doing this work where it feels exploitative. I should not have to fight this hard to get someone to listen about a problem that exists. That is a very real problem that is documented. It's not like it's some new thing that's like, well, this is this weird thing that no one thought about. No,
right. This
is an institutional, fundamental problem of the city of Charlotte and the county of Mecklenburg and how it's run. It's food insecurity. It's hungry children. It's hungry families. In the same way, it's homeless and lack of housing mm-hmm. while you see, you know, multi-million dollar developments all around you. and you see investment groups buying up all the houses so no one can purchase. All you can do is rent. These are real issues. So why do I have to fight hard to advocate for it, to be in the room, you know?
Right, right, man.
It's one of those things.
You just took me on a ride just in the last 60 seconds. I'm sure you've got some certain people or certain interactions that have hit you. I know that I've had them, even in the short amount of time that I've been working on this and the people that I've met, yeah, where I'm like, man, I'm never going to be the same again.
Yeah.
And I mean that in a powerful way as much as in a more awareness way, mm-hmm, and an empathetic way. And I'm sure that you've probably got a truck full of those.
Yeah.
Can you talk about any of those?
There's a woman that we still work with in some capacity now, mm-hmm, that we encountered last fall, I believe it was. That was a person that almost broke both of us because, you know, at that point we had been working in Tent City for months and, mm-hmm, months. We, you know, you see, you know who's there, you know the same faces, you're like, okay, right. So you're dealing with their needs and the relationship of that every day. So a new face is always like, uh-oh, what's happening for this person?
Yeah.
You know, but what was so challenging about this woman is that she was sitting on the side of 12th Street in her, she's somebody's grandmother, mm-hmm, 70s, completely lucid, no apparent mental health issues, no apparent substance issues. She was living with her sister. Her sister passed away from COVID, mm-hmm, and she couldn't afford her apartment. All the money that she did have, she had herself in a hotel. And what people don't realize, why don't people go to hotels? You know how expensive a motel is?
Yeah.
Overtime? A motel in a month is about almost twice the average rent.
Right.
Not even like, you know, the low rent.
Yes.
And so she ended up in Tent City because of that. I mean, we mobilized extremely quickly, but she was down there, I think, for about 2 weeks before we were able to really, we fought and truthfully, there was a little subterfuge to get her housing. Mm-hmm. We were able to get her housing, thank God. That's but awesome. It was like, this woman was terrified. And we're trying to make her as comfortable as possible. She's elderly, yeah, and she's alone.
Yeah.
We're trying to, you know who we trust down there who's already a resident in Tennessee. Like, can you look out for her? Sure. Can you make sure she eats? Mm-hmm. Like, let us know if there's any issues. Like, we did all of that. That was a tough one. I'm, of course, so thankful that we were able to get her housing, but that was rough.
Yeah.
And being fearful for her every day and making sure, you know, she was okay. Like, mm-hmm, that was rough.
Thank God for people like Kenya and her partner Jessica Lefkowitz and everyone connected to Hearts for the Invisible, as well as our neighbors from the homeless community who helped look out for this woman. My parents are both in their late 70s, and all I have to do is imagine them in that situation. And it makes me want to do everything that I can to make sure that there are options for people in those scenarios. And is it possible to bring the city officials to the table with the nonprofits? Should there be a connection? Let me look into that. Let me see what I can do. What's that? You want to talk to Mr. Gene? Why not? I love talking to Mr. Gene. But let me warn you, Mr. Gene gets pretty real. So just be ready.
So what keeps you from living off the streets? What's the biggest obstacle that or hurdle that you have to try and overcome?
Well, I have a guy at Northmont Hospital, Mr. Mm-hmm. James. He's been there 25 years. He wants me to go put an application doing the janitorial.
Okay.
I'll do anything, man, to get off the streets. I'll take any job. One of the guys I be over here, they work for the city picking up trash.
Mm-hmm.
He done told his supervisor. He said, look, there's a fella named Gene Jones. He come there and help us throw trash here, mm-hmm, and downtown.
Right.
He's going to put an application in. Look out for him. This man do that the kindness of his heart. He don't have to do this.
Right.
I guess one thing is most of the people that come here when I'm not working, like the groups and church groups,
mm-hmm,
and they be talking about, we don't need your help. I said, man, no, me taking my blessing from God. Let me do this. Let me put something on the table.
Mm-hmm.
That's what gives me hope. And some of the people that are walking down, what you got your head hanging down for? Man, don't do that. Pick your head up. That's hope for everybody.
How do they respond when you do that?
Some of them tell me, I don't want to hear. Some of them say, look, man, come on, let's talk.
That's awesome.
I say, I know people, man. My bosses know, got big family. And they know people that can get you a job.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you get the kind of support that you need?
My biggest problem right now, I have one pair of pants and that one pair of underwear. If I get another pair of pants, another pair of underwear, I feel like the happiest man in the world. I've been having these same pants on because I got banned from the shelter. Because I detailed a person car wouldn't pay me. I got clothes up there I can't even go get till another month.
So you detailed somebody's car, they wouldn't pay you, so you couldn't keep your spot at the shelter?
Mm-hmm. Because I demanded my money. I had six more cars to detail, $60 cars. My thing is getting the hell up out that shelter.
Do you feel a sense of freedom? Like, man, I can do whatever the, you know, I don't have worries in some regards like other people do.
In a way, yes, it is. If I want to get up at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning and go take a walk, I couldn't do that at the shelter. You couldn't go there to smoke break. I can go. Sometimes I get up, like this morning, I was up at 3 o'clock this morning.
Man.
I said, I'm going to walk in downtown, see what's going on.
So, Gene, let me ask you something. Is there something about you that anybody listening would be surprised to hear? Special talent, special skill, superpower, something like that.
Mm. Oh, this going to rock your world.
Okay.
I was a young boy. I think I was 12 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I was sitting there sitting by my own brother the day before. The two guns, I put bullets and slugs in. I said, fuck it, I give up. I'd ready to blow his brains. I had the bullet on that close to his motherfucking head for what he did to me.
I can't imagine what that was like.
The last time most of us was supposed to have been dead, I walked down on the square.
Mm-hmm.
My blood pressure was so bad, I blacked out and fell on top of a police officer.
Oh, damn.
I could hear what's going on.
Yeah.
Another officer, and I could see out the corner of my eye, got out of his car and did this. And he said, the man can't move. He don't mean nothing. He just fell on top of me.
Yeah, right.
He put a gun. He said, medic on the way? He mm-hmm. said, yeah, the ambulance should be here real soon. When I got in the ambulance,
mm-hmm.
they checked my blood pressure. The ambulance guy told me, see, if your blood pressure would have been 2 points high, you'd have had a massive heart attack and stroke. He said, the machine that I shocked your heart with, it wouldn't have done no good. Okay, they come back, check my blood pressure again. One doctor told me, your blood pressure is so high, it's eating your organs up real fast. I'm giving you 5 days to live. Another doctor came and examined me a little while later. He said, Mr. Jones, you might make it to 8 days because of eating your organs up. Another doctor came in there about an hour later and said, you might make it 13 days. I wouldn't give up. The guy over there from Beans and Rice, Pastor mm-hmm. Darrell, I was telling him about it. They prayed mm-hmm. for me. Now, that'd been almost 3 days, be 2 months ago when those doctors told me I was supposed to have been dead.
Wow.
3 days from now,
wow.
big 2 months, when the doctors told me my organs was going to be eaten up wow. because my blood pressure was so bad.
Look at you. Yep.
Them 2 months been gone.
Well, Gene, I really appreciate your time. You are an amazing man. I'm so glad that you're still here and that you're healthy. And I look forward to talking to you again, man. You're incredible. Thank you so much for sharing your time with me.
Anytime, for God.
Absolutely.
Anytime.
Thank you, sir. Gene got emotional no less than 4 times in our short conversation. Here's a guy who served our country in the Army for 6 years, something I never had the bravery and courage to do. I know it's a complicated matter and nothing's as clear-cut as it seems, but this guy fought for our freedom. Shouldn't we fight for him now? Pants and underwear. The basic necessities. The man can't get the words out without getting emotional. That's how much it would mean to him. So simple. And I probably don't have to tell you that Gene's response to, is there something that people would be surprised to know about you, was not at all what I was expecting. Gene's got every reason to give up. But he doesn't. He refuses. He gets upset even at the possibility of his life being cut short. You tell him he can't walk, he'll kick you. You tell him his organs are failing, yeah, we'll see about that. This guy wants a better life. I think he deserves to have it. Oh, and in case you're wondering, a few days after I talked with Mr. Gene, I did go out and get him some new pants and some new underwear. I wish it could have been more. We're going to hear a little bit more from Kenya right now. Thanks for being here.
To go back to what I said before about how it's so important, it can't just be housing. It has to be all services on deck holistically. Mm-hmm. Here is an example of that. So there was a Tent City resident that I met very early on. And what I noticed about him at the time, I do, you know very differently now. But at the beginning, I thought, you know, he was so different from everybody else. He really seemed like he was really fighting to get out of there. He was not trying to get mixed up in anything that was going on down there. We, as the pantry, took him under our wing to try to get him out of there. So we started trying to advocate. It turned out that he was in the middle of the housing process to a certain degree. He was getting some runaround. So we were like, you know, we're gonna get involved and advocate for you and find out who and what is happening. Mm-hmm. We made sure that he was actively looking for jobs. We were helping him do that. You know, we got him a phone so that he could answer his emails and use his phone to interview and stuff like that. You know, we put a lot of effort into his success. The problem was there were other things that he needed that we were advocating for but not getting. Mm-hmm. So he finally did get a housing voucher. That was a huge win because that's a very difficult thing to do. We all rallied around him to get him into this housing. There were delays. He was able to get a job that was pretty well paying, actually, because he was skilled. That was the other thing. He was skilled. What happened was, what was interesting was, when he got the voucher, it was supposed to be immediate. So the issue was trying to find a landlord that would accept the voucher. That's another challenge in Charlotte. Just because people get housing vouchers and state and federal support doesn't mean they actually get a unit. We are very limited on units that accept housing vouchers here. And that's a big part of this issue. Got him the unit. Everything was supposed to be good. And then the funding behind the voucher was delayed. And I think after everything that he had been through, because we had been working with him for months and months and months, I think that cracked him. Wow. I really do. Because in that, it ended up being about a 3-week period. So he was literally like, he was out in Tent City. We got the housing voucher approved. We fundraised and put him into a hotel for 2 weeks so he could work. Mm-hmm. We extended that for another week through fundraising so that he at least would be stable, because he was working really crazy hours and it wouldn't have worked for him to be in the tent and trying to do all this stuff. So we did all of that with the knowledge that the voucher was supposed to come through and the unit was supposed to be ready on this particular day. All of that got delayed. Mm-hmm. So he had no choice but to go back to Tent City because nobody could foot the bill to keep him in the hotel. Mm-hmm. And he still had to go to work. And in that 3-week time, I think, you know, unfortunately, he started drinking again. By the time that he moved into his unit, it seemed like, okay, this is good. He's stable. You know, now we're trying to get the services around him. That's a challenge. That's delayed. Unfortunately, everything fell apart with him in just a few months, to the point where he's incarcerated now. Mm. And this is what can happen to a person. It's not just about they're not getting the help that they receive initially, but this is what happens when the help starts to come through and it's not consistent and properly foundationalized around the person, what we call wraparound services. That's important because that is a make or break. Imagine the trauma of receiving what you need, then it's delayed, it's taken away, then receiving some other piece of what you need, but then it's not correct or something else is happening.
Right.
Imagine how we react to that in our daily lives. Sure. So imagine what that is for someone who's been already so beaten down by life.
Right. The dangling carrot, boy, that's, yeah.
And that is the moving target of social services.
I don't know how to follow that statement. So when we talk about this subject, whether it be hunger or poverty or homelessness, you know as well as I do that there's a lot of misconceptions that's tied to the people who are affected by this.
Right.
I don't know how many people that I hear about or have talked to that talk about, I'm working, I have a job, I'm going to work, but yet they're still in this position. The idea or misconception of, well, they're just lazy and pull yourself up by your bootstraps and do whatever. I mean, you know, this guy's working, and so he still has the hurdle to overcome in order to try and get to quote unquote normal life. How much out there is like that that we don't even realize?
That's why I led with a sadder story.
Yeah.
Because most times when you have nonprofit work or government work in social services, they lead with their success stories. Mm-hmm. So people think that things are working and then they don't ask further questions. And this is the time to ask questions. So many people, especially from last year who are experiencing food insecurity right now, are experiencing homelessness right now, underemployment or no employment. These are people that are hardworking, regular people. I'll give you a crazy example. A couple weeks ago at the food pantry, one of my last appointments on our schedule for the day was a new person. We had never seen her name before. She was in a 2019 Maserati.
Whoa.
She gets out the car. She's 25 and immediately starts sobbing. So we're like, what is happening? Let's talk, you know, talk to her and find out what's going on. And this is a lot of things that people don't realize, that this goes on all the time. She's sobbing. She needs our services, even though she's in a 2019 Maserati. That Maserati does not belong to her. That Maserati belongs to the man that just divorced her and left her a car and a house, no money, no job, and 4 children. Mm-hmm. There's so much of that was going on last year and is still going on. There is a, you know, that's when we say, like, all these societal issues, these ills, they're all interconnected. Mm-hmm. It's not just homelessness. It's homelessness and food insecurity. It's homelessness and food insecurity because of domestic violence, mm-hmm. mental health issues, substance use. All these things come together.
Right.
Lack of daycare, you know, underemployment, mm-hmm. racism, sexism, all these things play into it. It's you have to look at the big picture, not the drill down. These are things that we see all the time. Most of the people that need help and are struggling to this degree are hardworking, honest, dedicated people. They're your neighbor. They're your coworker. You know how many health workers we see at the pantry every week?
Tell me.
The heroes, right. The nurses. The frontline
workers, sure.
Yeah. Like, that's at least 20% of our total clientele.
Oh, my God.
They come before their shift. They come after their shift. They come and they pick up for other people that they work with.
Mm-hmm.
The people that are the heroes that we were banging pots and pans for, right? Yeah. Wow. People don't realize what it really is out here. And you also don't realize when you've been living and you get to a certain age and you feel secure, you have your job, you have your family, you don't realize really the cost of living, what it really costs.
Right.
And what it looks like now versus what it did when you first bought your house or you got out of college or, you know. The inability to see past oneself is such a plays such a role in all of this.
The cost of living in Charlotte has gone up astronomically from where I'm sitting. Yeah. You know, even from when I first got out of college, which feels like yesterday. I know that it's not. But I remember, because, God, it was a big topic of conversation amongst a lot of people. It's like, it's such an affordable city to live in. It's so affordable.
Yeah. I've been here now for almost 8 years. Mm-hmm. Cost of living has doubled.
That's crazy.
I mean, we do it. I'm fortunate, you know, my husband's career has advanced and him starting over here. I finished a third degree program. That's why I came here. I got that, did what I had to do. But yeah.
Well, I mean, there you go. You're from New York. You lived in New York.
Yeah, I live in the most expensive city in the world. I know.
Right. But now, so you think when it's getting comparable. Here, like, it really is.
In certain really weird ways. And I'm like, this is not it. I did not move to Charlotte for this. Like,
no.
We are life-loving people. We are fun. We have to be a little bit crazy to do this work and still do it no matter the challenges and obstacles that we face. You know, we all have stories. We all have experiences. I think that just bringing your own personality to the work is so important because, again, this work is about direct connection to other people at the end of the day, more so than anything else. And if you don't have a personality, you're not going to connect, right?
Right.
So this is literally what it is. And the uplifting piece to this is really people, listeners, understanding the power is with you, like truly, like not on some, you know, movie stuff, Disney, no. Right. Really, the power is with you. Every interview that I've done in this process, mm-hmm. I make a point to say, you have the power. Too many people have been complacent and completely disengaged.
Right.
So you get two extremes who are very passionate,
right.
And they're the loudest voices. We have a cultural saying, like you just loud and wrong. I've taught at some of the schools, high schools and some middle schools.
Okay.
Kids get it. They totally get it. They're like, yes, I understand what you're saying. They ask questions. They're very engaged. They want to understand. It's our age. Convincing people to step out of their comfort for the benefit of anybody else besides themselves. Right. That's what is important. And to me, hearing that message and having that message repeated that I have the power is the most uplifting part of this whole thing. It's up to me. It's up to each one of us individually. Knowing that, as opposed to living a life where you feel powerless, is huge. That's the empowerment for the day. You have the power to demand more and better for the quality of life that you want to have in this city, in this place, for yourself, for your kids, for your family, for your neighbors, for your coworkers, for your friends. That's the facts.
That's quite an ending. That is quite an ending. That's a great place. Man, I can't top that. I can't beat that. I've got more questions. I'm not going to ask them because we're going out on that note. Where can people find you? How can they support you?
So you can find me heartsandhandsfoodpantry.com. That's probably the easiest place. We, of course, have social media, Hearts and Hands Food Pantry, for both Facebook and Instagram. Hearts for the Invisible, charlotte.org is our website for that. We're also on Instagram. We've been quite quiet lately as we restructure, but we're there. We answer. Right. So, and most of the time, you're going to get me. And if you're interested in my for-profit work,
do it.
It's perfectbluealchemy.com. My store has been rocking. I'm excited to always bring new people to the fold. So,
you are amazing. I truly cannot thank you enough for coming in and taking the time to sit down and talk with me. Sure. I think you're incredible. I love the work that you're doing. You know, whether you're aware of it or not, I've tried to support when I can, where I
Absolutely.
Can. And I will continue to do so. You're awesome. I love you. Thank you so much for
Thank you so much for having me.
Stepping outside of our comfort zone is a difficult thing for most people, me included. No matter how many times I've tried to do it. I had a friend tell me once, and she was referencing herself when she said, if it scares me, then that's when I know it's what I'm supposed to be doing. I want to thank Mr. Gene for his openness and vulnerability in talking with me. I want to thank Kenya Joseph for being here today. I'm not good with being able to post hyperlinks and things like that, so here's her information one more time. Heartsandhandsfoodpantry.com. You can also find them on Facebook and Instagram. Heartsfortheinvisible.org. And perfectbluealchemy.com. I'll be back soon with more stories and more experiences. Until then, thank you all for being here. This is You May Have Seen. Thanks so much for listening. Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And if you'd like to leave a comment or review, that's always nice. You can also email us at youmayhaveseen@gmail.com if you have a comment or a question, and we'll give you a shout out in the next episode.